Inside the Cross Podcast.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. We are Terry Foy and Kyle Devin, and we are bringing you summaries from week six, week seven, whatever week it actually is. You know, most of the teams have played six games, so I think week six is a fair thing to call it. But the way in which we will actually signify this is we're going to spend about half the podcast talking about all-star game selections, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking to Long Island Lizard, Longstick Mitty, Brian Karolunas. Kyle, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure as always.
So let's just dive right in. I mean, you know, when you talk about this past weekend's worth of games, your whole angle or your, I guess, kind of mindset or point was a little bit of a reversion to a bad week of games coming off of what was probably a very good weekend of games in total, a lot of scoring, and then, you know, a really top drawer game played between Denver and Boston that, you know, kind of separated itself from the pack a little bit. I'm sorry, Chesapeake and Denver. This week, not nearly as much close, competitive, down-the-stretch type games, a lot more blowouts. That being said, you know, a couple people responded to your column on Inside Lacrosse on Tuesday and basically said, you know, this is what happens. They're not every league's games are great. How do you respond to that criticism, just saying, this is what happens? Why is your criticism more nuanced than, don't show me blowouts?
Well, I feel like people saying that basically just said it's an expansion year and let that be the excuse and saying like the talent's so spread out. And it's like, sure, that's part of it, but it's really like, it's the mentality that I see that upset me, I guess. I mean, you have guys getting like roasted, getting scored. I don't even have to tell you what game this is. You probably saw it. I know you saw it actually. Where guys got roasted by their attackmen, and then like the camera's still on them, and it shows them like slapping high five and like laughing. Like the defender who just got roasted by the attackman, just interacting with his attackman like that. How do you win doing that? That enraged me, and I kept that out of the column just because like I didn't want to call anyone out. And actually, I think I made a pretty concerted effort not to call specific people out, but to like kind of go into more of the team mindset, the team philosophy that I have an issue with a couple of these teams where like you have the opportunity to do this, that, or the other, and you just keep doing the same thing. You know, and I think a couple teams, maybe I am sure it has nothing to do with my column, but like made a realization, you know, going into this week, it's like, if we don't win games, we're out of the playoffs. This is not going to be a good successful season, regardless of where we're playing or who we are, where we're from. And they made some changes. You know, they made moves. Like there was like a ton of like little mini trades going on around the league, and a lot of it's like fringe stuff, but it's really these guys like just going, we need to fill roles. We need to get guys in here that want to win. And I think that's the problem. And that's what I was trying to touch on. And that's the spirit that I was trying to, you know, grasp onto and ride into the hearts of the readers. But, you know, sometimes it gets misconstrued, and I understand that.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's not necessarily something that, you know, I mean, you are, as a defender of the league, entitled to make that criticism if that's what you see. I mean, you know, I remember that the thing I've written about the league that generated the most response was in the wake of, I believe it was the 2010, but maybe it was the 2009 MLL Championship. I was very impressed by the degree to which it was clear to me that the players were playing for a championship, that they cared. And that was the point that I wanted to make coming away from this, is that this is a league where players care about the result. And, you know, people that, you know, MLL detractors responded, well, it's a championship. It's easy to care for one game, or it's easier to care over the course of 2 days. It's, you know, what do you do in the middle of June when, you know, the end is not in sight, and it's just a matter of being focused to get you across the bridge. And I think that's a fair point as well, but the counter argument to that is what professional sports don't experience that type of, you know, I guess third of the way, halfway through the season, doldrum, letdown, you know, side of things. But as you said, what other league is battling the legitimacy battle that the MLL is right now?
Right. And also, like, everyone understands and everyone knows that, like, if you're a casual sports fan, the Bobcats in the NBA had, like, the worst season ever, right? So, like, literally, statistically, the worst season ever. So, how do you think those players played the last couple games? You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of attitude, and you saw it. Like, people who are fans of them kind of saw it. And that's kind of the attitude that I saw a little bit. I'm not saying it was every team, but there was a couple guys on, like, a couple teams that were just like, yeah, whatever. I don't even care. You know? And that makes me mad. Like, historically as well as presently, it has always made me mad that, like, these guys don't appreciate what they're doing. I mean, they're laying down a groundwork for someday, hopefully, you know, for this to be a job, you know, for to be a professional lacrosse player, to have it be a job. I mean, how many people can say that that's their job now? Like 4, 10, something like that. I mean, in the future, it could be everyone, even, you know, guys that are just making a team for the first time. That has value. That has intrinsic responsibility to give your best every time you're on the field. And yes, you should have fun. Yes, you should sally. You should do all those things. You should try and go for the crazy
goals. Nobody says sally.
I say sally.
Nobody says it.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not with the times, bro, but it's fine. You have to go that extra step. You have to show that you care the whole time, because otherwise, what are you doing? You know, and it goes the other way too, where guys show that they care too much and they do that whole pump up the crowd thing when it's like the first quarter and you just look dumb. Like, you need to have like a barometer, I feel, and everyone's barometer is so different right now that it's throwing everything into chaos. You know, like when you see, you talked about the championship, and I don't know if you're referencing the Nationals versus the Outlaws. Is that the game you're talking about, championship game?
Yeah, I believe that was 2009. Yeah, 2009.
Okay, so I was on the field for that game, and the thing that stuck with me isn't the team that won. It's the team that lost, and that was Denver. And, like, everyone runs out to celebrate for the Nationals, and Denver waits, lined up. And the looks on all those players' faces, like, we're talking about, like, Kyle Harris and Max Seabold, all these guys just sitting there stone-faced, just like, shake our hand. You know what I mean? Like, that is what stuck with me, because that means they cared. They cared that they lost. And that's a big deal. And that cannot be ignored going forward. Like, you have to have that mentality in this league to succeed. You know, I just feel that way. You know, you can say that's wrong. You can say, well, they can do whatever they want, and they can. They're human beings. But I want to see more urgency. I want there to be, you know, there's an urgency to being an MLL player. You know, there's an urgency to the effort you put in. And I didn't see that this weekend, and it upset me, and I put it in the column, and it was pretty salty. I'll admit it, you know.
Well, but, did you see it in Long Island's 13-10 win over Boston?
No, that was probably the game that it was not like that, because everyone was trying that whole game. That would probably be the exception to the rule. I still feel like Boston really kind of let down in that fourth quarter. I mean, but that's not to take away from Long Island. And really, I did focus on the negative in the column, but the positive of that game is that Long Island was like throwing themselves in front of the ball, you know, like just making like Mighty Ducks three plays, jumping in, like make the first move, Conway, jump and take the puck. It was awesome. It was great to watch. And Drew Adams was great to watch in that game. But when Boston has so many weapons, it's kind of ridiculous to think that they couldn't score a goal for an entire quarter when they were down.
And that is definitely where the questions come in. What did you see? Was it, what percentage was Long Island's defensive effort? What percentage was Boston's inability to create offense? Because I got an opportunity to watch this game down the stretch, and granted, there was basketball on, so for at least a portion of it, I was flipping. But, you know, what I saw was a Boston team that couldn't generate ball movement. I thought that it was bizarre, because typically you see offensive struggle, and it's because they don't have a guy that can run past their opponent. Well, that wasn't the problem to me. I thought that, you know, there were opportunities where, you know, whether it was Rabel or, you know, Buchanan, I think a time or two, Stone, were able to get a step, but there was no slide, and they just weren't able to finish, so there was no ball movement. They basically, it almost seemed like Long Island was very content to let primary dodgers become shooters. Drew Adams either ate them up, or they just couldn't get good looks because of a good, you know, recovery by the guy that was beaten, and then ultimately, you know, they just didn't allow them to spin the ball. I don't know, did you see that?
I think that the Boston in general offensively settled for everything. And that was the big problem is that, you know, Rabel would have a dodge, kill, like just kill his guy, leave him in the dust, get an open pass. And that pass was dropped a lot. Like, let's be real. That pass was dropped by numerous players, Buchanan, Poske, Boyle, Stone, all these guys dropped a pass, you know, that could have been a goal. And I'm sure they know that. That's not like news, me telling you that or telling fans that. But when other people got steps and other people, you know, drew slides or got looks, they didn't take the extra step to drain it. You know what I mean? And that's really what happened. And I don't know if Long Island prevented ball movement so much as Boston settled for deeper shots than they usually do. But their handle was not there and something was clearly amiss, but I really think Drew Adams was, you know, he made like four saves that should have been goals in that quarter alone, and he was amazing in that quarter. And I give a lot, if you're saying percentage-wise, I'm giving like 50% to Drew Adams and then like 25-25 to Boston's offensive settling and, you know, Long Island's adjustment. I think that's really how it breaks down. I mean, I think he was that good.
One of the primary adjustments after taking – 2 penalties in the first quarter and 6 in the second. Long Island did not take a penalty in the third or fourth quarter. Boston not penalized at all throughout the course of the game. Lizards come away with a 3-goal victory. Brian Langtry continues to put up numbers, goal and 2 assists. Matt Gibson continues to put up numbers, 3 points for him as well. Really impressive. Long Island, super balanced scoring. Nobody above 3 points in total. You know, it's a team that seems like it's got some offensive contributions from places that maybe you didn't necessarily expect, at least at the level that they're at. And, you know, they put up that goal total getting nothing out of Steven Pizer. What do you think of, you know, this Long Island offense and the way in which it may or may not be built for a championship?
Man, I think that's how they win, is they win games that don't go over 25 goals combined. That's how they win. And you can say it's winning ugly or taking the air out of the ball, like, and I've said that before, but if that's how you win and that's the personnel you win with, then I'm all for it. Do it. You know what I mean? And I think Long Island doesn't get a ton of great shots, but what they do well is move the ball in the 6-on-6 for a good shot. And if they struggle with that, then the weakness of that is that they often – Pizer is the last guy with the ball and he hasn't had a good year, but I feel like if Pizer was on in that game, you know, that could have been a lot worse for the Cannons because he just missed a ton of chances and he's, you know, the Lizards are lucky they didn't need him to win the game. But I mean, when you got guys like Seabold to step up and Gibson and Langtry to score, those aren't guys really, I think anymore that can score, that can put up tons of points. Like they can put up goals and Gibson puts up assists, but I don't think those are guys that have 8-point games with any regularity.
Well, and, I mean, no, certainly that flies in the face of evidence right now.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, they don't really do that often. Like when it happens, Long Island pretty much wins.
Well, they hadn't been doing it. You know what I mean? Like, and then Langtry didn't have this type of year last year. Seabold was, you know, apparently very injured. So yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I guess that was the nature of my question. Like, this does, to me, seem like a sustainable model. I think this Lizards offense is better than the Lizards offense last year because I feel like they're at least marginally less vulnerable to bad performances out of Dino and Berger, which last year, if they got the bad performances out of Dino and Berger, they were sunk. There was very little in the way of plan B. I don't think they rely on any guy. You know, it's possible that the entire team could go cold, but that seems less likely than one or two guys just not having it that day.
Right, and they're not, there's no black holes this year, I think is kind of how I would put it, because Junior was like that too when he was there as well. Like, he would get the ball and the ball would just disappear and he'd go. You know, it just gets sucked into the vortex and that's it. Like, you're not going to see the ball, but I think everybody that plays in this team now, right? You know, Ryan Young, Matt Gibson, Seabold, all these guys, like they like passing. They're good at passing. They can do it. You know, even Langtry, who I don't think is known as a passer, but he can. You know, it like they have no reluctance, I should say. They have a very good team system offensively. Defensively, they change their slide so much that it's like, and they change around personnel and they move guys around a lot that it's hard to evaluate what they're doing defensively a lot of the time. But, you know, they're a team that can get eaten up by one guy and then make an adjustment and that guy never touches the ball again. You know, so I guess that's good. That's definitely something to look for. But I think that they're more of like a second half team where like they make that adjustment at halftime and then they play much better in the second half usually. They don't usually go into the half up. That's not something they do. And it's usually close because of, you know, the style they play, which is not fast break, not super high scoring, you know, looking for the best chance. And that's what they have to do to win games.
And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues. We are joined now by Long Island Lizard, Brian Karalunas. Brian, you guys are coming off an unbelievable win over, over the Boston Cannons. Kind of, I don't know if it might be too strong to say shifting the balance of power at the top of the MLL charts, but certainly shaking things up a little bit, handing the Cannons their second loss. Can you just kind of talk about how the game unfolded for you, for your team, and, you know, what you kind of take away from a win like that at this point in the season?
Yeah, you know, it's huge, especially after losing our first two games. And, you know, I think we had a bunch of doubters going into the season. It was a big win for us in terms of boosting our confidence. You know, we got a little flack for having our two wins over the expansion teams. And I heard a little bit about us needing to get a legitimate win to, you know, prove ourselves as a contender. So I think it does that, give the team a ton of confidence and exchanging emails and calls back and forth all week, pumped to get the season, keep it rolling.
Brian, what's up? It's Kyle, man. How you doing?
Hey, Kyle. What's going on?
What's up? So before we do these interviews, we go to the Twitter and, I kind of ask for questions. And, this week's question comes from B Lynch 18. And, it's as an LSM, how do you think your role will change with the addition of, Costabile as the season goes on?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, with Costabile and also with Tim Henderson, other LSM, we weren't sure how it was going to play out. But, what we've done in the first couple of games, which seemed to work nicely, is they've been taking a lot of runs at LSM. And, as the second year player, the old veteran, I bumped onto close. I've been a lot of close team market on the tackling, which has been really neat, actually. So I think as the season continues, we'll probably do a 3-man rotation, and depending on matchups, we'll all be bumping all over the field.
Cool.
Nice. That's interesting. Obviously, you know, kind of a little bit of a development for you as your game goes along. And certainly it's interesting. Some of the best players in the league have proven the capacity to do that, whether it's a guy like Matt Poske starting out as a midfielder, dropping down to play attack and winning an MVP. Mitch Belisle comes to mind as a guy who, when he was with the Long Island Los Angeles Riptide, was a short stick D-mid. You know, now he's back to playing close defense. It's definitely one of the hallmarks of the league. I guess, you know, my question is kind of, You at Villanova delineated yourself by having a very distinct style. You were the nation's premier takeaway defender. How has your game translated in the MLL? What are some of the other things that you've had to change in order to be a successful MLL player or not change? You know, like what are some of the things that your game kind of naturally fit toward?
Well, I think the one thing that my game translated well in the MLL was kind of that relentless one-on-one style, so you're pushing out all over the field. And if you sit back in this league, I mean, the shooters are so good, you're just going to get picked apart. So I think that was one thing that worked to my advantage coming in. In terms of improving, it's not like college in that every guy you're going against is a premier ball handler. So, you know, college you can get matched up with, not to knock on the short 16 middies or other midfielders in college, but guys you can take the ball away from a little easier. This, it's tough. So I really stressed in the offseason, you know, I put on about 10, 15 pounds and really worked on my strength and been trying to play a lot more body positioning too. To kind of make up and couple with the takeaway checks.
Hey, you've been in the league for 2 years, but you've played against some of the toughest defensemen in the history of the game, in Spallina and Polanco. What did those guys teach you last year, and how different has this season been without them?
It's true. I was in for a little bit of a surprise playing with those two. I've always said, you know, I've always drawn a little bit and got into it all myself, but against those two, I was a child. I mean, they really did all the talking, so it was good. You know, they brought a tenacity to the field that I really actually learned a lot from, and they both took me under their wing last year as kind of the youngest guy in the D with a the two veterans, so they taught me a ton. That being said, in their absence, we've been able to pull in a couple rookies, Parker McKee, and we had veteran leadership with Pasadena back there on D. And so again, we've really stressed, we've gotten more athletic, and we've really started stressing winning in our individual matchups, and taking advantage of that athleticism. So our D has changed a lot without those go.
And you talk about tenacious or tenacity. There really isn't anybody that's more tenacious in this league than Brian Langtry. And I think that what he has done so far this season at the offensive end of the field for you guys is one of the more under the radar remarkable stories in my time, paying attention to the league. What's it been like playing alongside a guy like Tree? And then, I think about it from the context of if I were playing alongside, he's the type of guy that I would work so hard not to let down because he is so intense and he puts so much on the line and he's been around for so long. What's it like being at the opposite end of the field from a guy like that?
I mean, Langtry, I can't stress enough. He literally is the man. I mean, pregame, in-game, postgame, he's just the nicest guy in the world. He tries so hard, and it's funny, we get a chuckle out of it because he seems to just show up to these games and put in 5 goals like nothing. And 99% of the time, it's behind the back or some ridiculous between-the-legs shot. So actually, a few games ago, we actually went up to Denver and got beat up pretty bad. Langtry talked to the team after the game and mentioned that he might be the oldest player in the league without a championship. I think that's what he said. And that really, coming from a younger guy like myself and a few of the younger guys on the team, really put things in perspective. And makes you really want to work hard for him. And we're really fighting for that championship this year.
Brian, I was talking to your coach Spallina today on the conference call, and he afterwards on Twitter, he was like, "Hey, make sure to tell Karolinos he's the most underrated player in the game, and ask him how I fire him up before every game." So I'm asking, how does he fire you up before every game?
Coach knows I have a little bit of a competitive streak, so he usually likes to remind me about being a dark horse. So. He puts me in my place. I want to be the nicest thing he's ever said to me. Normally he's telling me how much I'm going to get eaten up by whoever I'm playing. So always like to boost that confidence for a game.
Brian, you're
I think a quarter. What's that?
No. I was just going to ask the next question. Finish up.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, so you're a JD guy, correct? You grew up in upstate.
Yep.
And then they had a great season, didn't finish it off as many people were hoping the Rams did or would, but that's neither here nor there. You go on to Villanova, you were able to be a part of an ascendant program that I played in, I believe, won our Laxey for Game of the Year last year, the 5-4 game against Syracuse. So point being, you've been a part of a lot of big games, a lot of really great game day atmospheres. I guess, Long Island's taken a few knocks for not necessarily being able to get enormous crowds out to Hofstra. What do you think of, I guess, kind of the MLL game day experience in comparison to what you've been able to be a part over the course of your lacrosse career? And what do you think maybe, whether it's the league, the franchises, whatever, if you were in charge, what would you do to try to ramp things up a little bit?
That's a good question. Going off the first part of that, yeah, it was a little bit different, especially, you're not practicing every day. So leading up to game time, you're seeing guys either the night before practice or just that same game day. You don't have as much time to prepare with them to kind of get in the right mental mindset. So you really have to be self-disciplined, and you have to get yourself ready for the game more than anything, which was a big change for me going in last year, really taking care of myself during the week to be ready for the game day. And in terms of the league going forward, honestly, even between this year and last, I've noticed a big difference in crowds. And, for us in particular, mentioned we've been knocked for not having as big of crowds. I think the new ownership group is going to help that tremendously. If I were in charge, I think a ton of it just has to do with marketing. I think it's a really fun brand of game, or a really fun brand of lacrosse to watch. And I think it's even more fun to play than in college just because of the speed and the skill of all the players. So I think with a little bit of marketing, it would be great. And also the other thing I think that needs to develop is, and this really stuck out to me in Boston, because their fans really were Boston fans. And I was getting ripped on by 8-year-old kids walking onto the field asking if I was a practice player, which I really loved. I think when fans start to become passionate about their team, they're going to get a lot the crowds are going to start increasing tremendously.
All right, well, Brian Karolinos, congratulations. You are an all-star, a young gun, as the format has reverted back to the old days, which I'm sure MLL fans are – fans and purists are excited about. And thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Good luck going forward as you continue to chase that championship with the Long Island Lizards.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's whip around the rest of the league. We've got three other results to hit on. I'm going to give you 1 minute to make your point about each game. Chesapeake putting a 15-7 herp down on the Charlotte Hounds. What'd you take away from that one?
Garbage. Oh, no, we're not doing one-word answers because that's how I feel about it. No, it was not a good game to watch. I mean, you know, it's nice to see, you know, Drew Westervelt, you know, get off and score some goals. It's, you know, Polanco getting game misconducts, like guys getting thrown around the field. I mean, that's Chesapeake's game. They're hard as nails on one end, and then they're just hard shooting on the other. That's how Chesapeake is. And really, they're one of the teams that's playing the best, going into, the week before the All-Star break, So we'll call it. And you know, Charlotte just so disorganized on defense. So not, I mean, they're just not an organized team anywhere. It seems like shifts for guys, like midfielders especially, are so arbitrary that it's like, you know, everybody's getting mixed and matched because nothing's working, where, you know, there's no continuity there. It's kind of like what the Rattlers do, except Charlotte has the same guys. You know, the Rattlers at least move their guys around, and you can excuse that, and they've beaten some good teams, whereas the Hounds have not. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was that great of a contest to watch, personally. So.
You got to get a better sense of what 1 minute actually entails. Denver 16, Ohio 8. This game was at one point, I believe, 13-2, maybe even worse than that. What came out of Columbus?
This is the first game, and I said this before we started the podcast, that I've shut off in the fourth quarter in a long time. In a long time. I pride myself on watching all the games, and it's tough to fit them all in, trust me, and some of them watching at like 2 a.m., but I couldn't do it anymore. I just shut it off. And the thing about this game is that it's not like Ohio got outshot by like 100 shots. They got shot by like 8, and they just couldn't put the ball in the net. And when you can't do that, you can never win the game. And Denver is very efficient on offense, so.
And then to wrap things up in Hamilton, I believe it was in Hamilton. Yeah, it was in Hamilton. 17-8 winners over Rochester. Are the Nationals rounding into late season championship form?
I mean, this is what they do, right? They just wait for all their guys to get back and just be like, hey, I remember playing with you last year. Hey, this is fun. You know, Stephen Keough had himself a game, three goals and three assists, 6 points. I think those were his first assists of his career, not counting the playoffs. so that was pretty cool to get the hat trick assist. It's just tough to watch, you know, guys like Crotty struggle when they're kind of put up on the pedestal as the best in the league. And he definitely struggled in this game and only came out with like 2 assists and probably should have had a couple more goals, but just couldn't finish, you know, just bouncing past pipe. And that's all she wrote. You know, I mean, Hamilton's a juggernaut. You have to slow them down. And if you don't slow them down early, they'll just run all over you.
It's a midfielders league. Joe Walters, Kevin Crowley, David Earl combined for 11 points. How does that midfield line compare to any other midfield line in the league?
I mean, it's one of the best. I mean, I think Joe Walt kind of flips back and forth depending on whether or not Casey's playing to attack in midfield. But he's kind of like a swingman in that way. But, you know, it's offensively, that's a great group. I don't know if athletically it's the best athletic midfield out there, but it's definitely offensively just really imposing. You know, I mean, who do you short pull there? You can't short pull Walters. You just can't. He'll destroy you. You know, even though everyone knows he only goes left, apparently it's enough, you know, and he'll just stuff goals down your throat all day if you put a shorty on him. So the other two guys just, you know, Earl has really benefited as almost the third middie in a lot of situations and gotten a lot of open looks.
And what'd you think out of the goalie performance, Brett Queener playing deep into the fourth quarter?
I mean, you know, Brett Queener's like that goalie that when he's hot, he's just unstoppable. And when he's cold, he's just kind of like tough to watch because it looks like everything's going in. But, you know, he was hot in this game and definitely, you know, he made 11 saves. He did his job, you know, and he didn't really have Rodgers wasn't there because he was apparently sick and might have mono. So we found out on the conference call today.
Yeah, that's going around.
So, you know, he didn't really have that pressure, and you know, Brent Herbst is backup, but you know, Kuechly does a great job. I feel like he's probably better when he doesn't have to worry about a guy coming in at the half. So maybe Hamilton's found their guy. We'll see.
And then obviously the crown jewel of the podcast, we found out today that not only are roughly 40 of the game's best players going to Florida, to Palm Beach, Florida Atlantic University Stadium, to take part in the MLL All-Star Game. So are you, Kyle Devitt.
Yes. Yes. The one-man band. Send him. It'll be awesome. I booked the flight, booked the hotel. I'm excited to be completely on my own. I'm sure you guys are terrified of what's going to transpire, but you know, it's always unpredictable and it's always fun. MLL All-Star games, and you know, I'm looking forward to it. I really am.
It's not really the type of situation when you look at the rosters that you could talk about snubs, because for a lot of the guys that you would have expected to be there, you know, there are reasons that they can't attend. But what do you take away from the Young Guns old school roster?
I mean, really, if just looking it over, if I had to guess, and obviously these games are close every year, I'm not predicting a blowout, but defensively, you know, when you look at the old school and the Young Guns, how are the old school going to guard the Young Guns? Like, how is that going to happen? There's so much like dynamism going on, you know, like there's just so many people that can just blow past anybody on the Young Guns. And you know, there's like no D-mids in this game, you know, and the younger guys that can still play defense are in the game, you know, like Jeremy Sievers can play a little defense. Joe Von Miller can play a little defense. You know, Mike Stone could play a little defense. That's what he started playing on at Boston. And, you know, who does the old school have for D-mids? Guys that can play defense. You know, Casey Powell playing defense? No. Paul Rabeau playing defense? No. Streamer playing defense? No. Joe Walters playing defense? No. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's going to be great. I think the Young Guns are going to run all over them as far as a midfield standpoint goes, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen, because the attack is just so stacked for both teams, and you know, great goalies on both sides. So it's going to be awesome. I just can't wait.
The last time they used this format, I believe my college class was a part of the Young Guns group. I'm now a member of the old school by age, according to the MLL. It's a tough pill to swallow, gotta say.
Random personal anecdote in the podcast. Nice. It's good. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's funny to consider, you know, someone like Rabel old school. Just putting that out there. I think that's funny. Like, to me, Mundorf being old school is funny, but you know, it's true. They've been in the league long enough. Kevin Buchanan as an old school, that's just weird to me. It seems like they just came out of college and they've only played for a couple of years, but you know, it's pretty cool. It's definitely a strange format for sure. And I'm sure more than a few MLL fans will have to have it explained to them the exact years and who qualifies for what, but you know, that's part of the fun. That's part of the change they're making here.
What is the one thing that you're looking to see most out of this All-Star game? It's always difficult to predict what the freestyle competition is going to bring, but typically it is probably the most memorable experience from the weekend. Outside of that, like I said, difficult to predict. What is one thing that you're looking for to be a memory that you take away from this one?
I mean, I'm done with that, with the freestyle stuff. I think it's all been done. I'm jaded, just like, you know, NBA dunk contest fans are. I'm just so jaded.
Well, what does that mean?
It means that this is the year of the goalie gauntlet. That's what that means. It's the year of the goalie gauntlet. It's going to be amazing. Schwartzman, Queener, Burke, and Adams. Awesome. Cannot wait to see it. Cannot wait.
See, I don't understand how they went that route when there was something like Manos, Rogers, Mara. Schwartzman. Manos, that is on the table.
Manos and Mara have like a goals against average of like 24. They're not getting the All-Star game.
No, I mean, I know, but the gauntlet is like all about agility and skill. It would be awesome to see them run through it.
Well, now that you've said that, I'm predicting a Jesse Schwartzman victory. Just cause, you know, he likes when people underestimate him. And, had some nice ball handling last year. He gutted it out. I think it's gonna be a tight one this year as well. Gonna go with that prediction. As for like skill stuff, like I said, it's fun to watch. That's more for like, you know, spectacle than effect. But we'll see. Like maybe someone will do something crazy this year. I don't know. We'll see. I doubt it.
I hope you come in with an open mind. I thought that the Spelina Berger impersonation was pretty cool. It was original.
Yeah.
It was creative.
Well, it's also it's kind of like me talking them down will make them maybe try and be more creative. So I feel like it's kind of like negative reinforcement. It's just like, yeah, I'm not impressed. Maybe you guys should do something different. Maybe you should try harder. That's kind of my angle. So, you know, surprise the doubters, surprise the haters, do something awesome. That's kind of what the All-Star Weekend's about, you know? I mean, it's in many ways so much more fun than Championship Weekend, just because, there's so many, you know, it's in a different place this year, so I don't really know how that's going to be. I haven't really traveled for All-Star games. I've just really been to the ones in Boston, but, you know, it's all about all these different people getting in one space to watch the best lacrosse players in the world and just seeing how creative and crazy they can be in the game and in the contest.
And there's no, I mean, not to say there's nothing on the line, but there's no pressure. You know what I mean? There's no, the vibe is to have fun. That's why it's fun, you know?
Right.
And I think that, yeah, it's great to be a part of. Definitely recommend anybody that hasn't gotten an opportunity to be a part of it to go check it out if the opportunity avails you. But, Kyle, let's bring this thing in for a close. What are we looking at? We've got Boston, Charlotte, Hamilton, Chesapeake, Long Island, Ohio, Rochester, Denver. None of those matchups, maybe Hamilton, Chesapeake is probably the premier matchup of the weekend. It's taking place at Navy Marine Corps Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland on Saturday night at 7 p.m. Anything else that you're going to keep your eye on this weekend?
I think the seesaw of Rochester's season is something to keep an eye on. Rochester, Denver. Could be a big game. You know, I mean, Rochester's shown giant killing ability and Denver played really well this weekend. But we'll see what happens. I really think that Denver's kind of got all their guys back and Lee Zink is 100% and, he's been the best defenseman, you know, just guarding one-on-one. Like a lot of people give Evans Dapp, myself included, by the way. I don't know if you saw the, inside the MLL piece where I had about a 30-second rant about how awesome he is and apparently thinks I hate him. Just gonna put that out there, but yeah, that happened. But you know, Lee Zink is awesome to watch. If you're just gonna pick like a player to watch on a field that plays defense, he's definitely the guy to watch. And if you're a young defenseman growing up, he's definitely someone to emulate because he just neutralizes guys, takes guys out of the equation, and plays solid body, solid checks. Just an all around great defenseman, one of the all time greats. So. Looking forward to him guarding karate because that's what we kind of talked about in the MLL podcast. We're on the MLL podcast. The MLL conference call this morning. So I'm pretty excited to see that. That's a good matchup. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Charlotte puts up a fight. Ohio puts up a fight, you know, and Hamilton Chesapeake gives us a similar game to Chesapeake Denver from 2 weeks ago.
Correct if I'm wrong. I mean, granted, there's no Jeff Snyder, but there's some possibilities for some fireworks in that Chesapeake Hamilton game in terms of tempers flaring, right?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of heated discussions between those teams, and really any game where Spelina and Polanco are playing, one of them might get kicked out at any time. So it's always exciting to watch. And you know, the thing about Chesapeake is they just stockpile. So they'll just throw in another pole and they'll be fine. You know, I mean, you even got like Dan Hostetler dancing around offenses scoring goals now. So, you know, they're definitely fun to watch. And, you're lucky to have them in your area that you can go see them in person. So.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not going to be there this weekend, but I'll be there soon. I'll be there in spirit.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be there virtually.
There you go.
Television, so.
Kyle Devitt, that's going to do it for this week's MLL Inside Lacrosse podcast. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you to Brian Karolunas for joining us, and we will talk to you guys again next week.
Short and sweet. Awesome. See you guys later.
Inside the Cross Podcast.